Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Smell Podcast. I'm your host, Katie Boateng. This week, join me in listening to an interview with Sharika Bivens. She lives with acquired anosmia, with occasional bouts of being able to smell again. She's currently located in Virginia and is the creator of the blog and website called My Onosmatic Life, Making Sense Out of Scentless Life. We talk about how she became anosmic back in 2007 and has been dealing with nasal polyps that reoccur and chronic congestion issues. Sharika believes that she has Samter's triad, which is the condition in which an individual has asthma, sinus inflammation with recurring nasal polyps, and sensitivity to aspirin and some other NSAIDs. We also speak about her love of cooking, the importance of managing your mental health, and much more. Our interview was recorded in February 2021. Let's listen in. Hi, Sharika. Thank you so much for joining me today on the Smell Podcast. Can you please tell us a little bit about yourself? What do you do? Where are you from and where do you currently live?
Hi, Katie. Well, thank you again for having me. I am the writer of My Anosmatic Life, Making Sense Out of Scentless Life. It's a blog. And currently, I am a full-time graduate student working on my master's in social work. And I work as a phone banker for a nonprofit. So in other words, I get paid to identify unregistered voters, inform voters on upcoming elections, and help them get out to vote. I grew up as a military brat, but I call Fayetteville, North Carolina home and currently live in Virginia.
Oh, that's awesome. My family also grew up in the military, so it's always nice to hear from someone else who has a similar background.
That's awesome.
Yeah, thank you. So can you tell us a little bit more? What is your smell disorder story?
Katie, that is a loaded question. I have lived experiences with anosmia, which is no sense of smell. And I also sometimes experience smelling things that aren't there, like smoke. But I'll actually begin my story with an allergic reaction that I had to ibuprofen during college in 2007. Ibuprofen, it's always has been my go-to medication for years. And I had a really bad reaction that my roommate had to call the ambulance, and I was taken to the hospital and injected with Benadryl in my IV. All that I can remember after that is that I had like an extended stuffy nose. And I've always had these issues with allergies since I moved to Virginia, but I've never to the extent of not smelling for a long time. So, you know, spring had passed and then summer came and I still couldn't smell. So I say I lost my sense of smell back in the spring of 2007. So that fall of 2007, I finally saw a doctor and, you know, established a doctor-patient relationship with my ear, nose, throat doctor, aka ENT. And so I had an MRI, CT scan, and lots of fun with getting a endoscopic instruments down my nose. And so it was discovered that I had a lot of nasal polyps in my nose. And as my doctor described them, they're like the size of small grapes, like all bunched together, but you know, they're painless growths and there's just in the lining of the nasal passages. And so the following January in 2008, I had my first endoscopic nasal polyptomy. So that's just the surgical removal of nasal polyps. And so after that surgery, my nasal polyps, they grew back aggressively not too long after surgery. Then I had another surgery in 2012. That one was a little bit more successful, left me less congested because I had a lot of issues with congestion and just sounding like I was sick. And I've since refused to do a third surgery. But I still have nasal polyps and the congestion is getting out of control again. But something that I have is actually called Samter's triad. I discovered this in 2019 from an allergist that I saw when I was out of town on an organizing job. She had diagnosed me with this because I have a sensitivity to aspirin, nasal polyps, and then I have asthma. That was interesting. You know, another interesting thing is that, you know, I can smell when I get steroids. So I get really bad sinus infections once or twice a year. I'll get some prednisone and I'll be able to smell for a couple of days. And actually recently I was smelling for like about 7 months from a cortisone shot. So that was really, you know, interesting, but I'm trying to figure out how to get my sense of smell back. And I, you know, I just started smell training.
Well, it sounds like a lot of like medical interventions for you, which can be really scary. I guess that's what I'm feeling with your story, is it sounds a little bit scary to have to go through multiple surgeries. Are the polyps something that just typically regrow? They can't be taken out permanently?
With my case, as my ENT doctor had told me, I have really aggressive case of nasal polyp. And so with the first surgery, he was able to remove them, but they just came back. And so I guess it just depends on the person and, you know, the case that they have. But with mine, like, I've just consistently had them for 14 years.
Mm-hmm. Another thing that comes to mind for me is, how is it like for you having anosmia due to this, not being able to smell typically, then receiving those steroids and then having a sense of smell again for 7 months? What was that like for you?
Oh, man. It was euphoric. when I can smell, I like don't want it to end, but it's like when I don't have it, I always wonder about getting it back. And so when I get the steroids, Katie, I always know 10 times out of 10, my sense of smell comes back. So yeah, it's ever since I got prednisone, and I think I got my first thing of prednisone in like 2008 or 2009. So every time I get it, I can smell. It's a very wonderful feeling because yeah. I get to smell all the things that I've been missing. That's the thing that pretty much when I get the prednisones, I'm looking forward to that day. And it usually kicks in the next day that I can smell and then I can taste everything. So when I can fully smell, that's when I can fully taste.
Wow. I know just like anecdotally that long-term steroid use is problematic and causes its own issues. So it doesn't sound like that could be a solution for the long-term.
Not at all. It's not sustainable. That's why I'm trying to find alternative avenues to get it.
Yeah. So can you tell us a little bit more about your blog? You mentioned that at the beginning, you're a blog writer. So you have the My Honest Medic Life, Making Sense Out of a Scentless Life. When did you start that in your journey and how can listeners find that online?
So I started my blog, My Honest Medic Life, in May 2016. And I started it as an outlet, Katie, because anosmia can feel like such an isolated experience, as you would know. And I didn't see anyone who looked like me in the blogosphere of people writing about their experiences with anosmia. And so I created it to raise more awareness about anosmia by sharing information. I share a couple of links on my site and also my own personal life experiences with it while I actually navigate, you know, this scentless life of mine. And so listeners can find my blog by going to myanosmeticlife.wordpress.com. So that's myanosmeticlife.wordpress.com.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll definitely make sure that I include that in the show notes as well so that they can click on it there. How have you found the blog? Like for me, and I guess to ask the better question, for me, the podcast has been extremely therapeutic to just talk to other people who also have anosmia. Have you found that writing the blog has been helpful in that capacity?
Oh, tremendously. It's really, really helpful to me because, you know, I write about like how it all started with me. I've covered, you know, mental health because anosmia can bring depression and anxiety. And I know firsthand what that's like. And then I get to, you know, let people know, hey, we have an awareness day. That's important. So I feel like it's great for me because I know I'm doing something good and letting people know that there are people out there, you know, like me. And then also helps people who have anosmia. They get to see someone and know that they aren't alone. And so I found that it's been a little bit educational for some. And, you know, for me, it's just pretty much therapeutic. Like, I just like being able to share how I'm feeling and what I'm doing to get my sense of smell back.
I totally relate to that. So kind of shifting gears a little bit, let's talk a little bit about how do you think your smell disorder impacts your relationship with food and eating, if it does at all?
Oh, anosmia tremendously impacts my relationship with food and eating. It got so depressing at some point that I'd actually gained over like 20 pounds. And, you know, I can't barely taste anything. So that sucks to me. So I had a really bad habit of immediately putting seasonings on my food without even trying it. And it's a habit I still have. But, you know, in my mind, it just needs enhancing because my taste sucked. And so I actually got high blood pressure from putting excessive salt on everything. And then I ended up having to get my gallbladder removed because I had gallstones. And I feel like that all contributed to my anosmia with, you know, how I was feeling mentally and, you know, just putting salt and just eating very unhealthy. I was able to get rid of my high blood pressure at some point, but it's recently back. But, you know, that's a totally another story. But on a positive note, I really love to cook. Cooking has been so therapeutic for me with living with anosmia. You know, it's just the beauty of food, textures, and just the joy I get from people's compliments. And so when it comes to anosmia, my relationship with, you know, food, it's great when it comes to the cooking part. I don't let it impact me so much when I try to enjoy food now as I used to. You know, I really enjoy cooking for my family. And so as someone who can't smell and barely taste, there's no greater feeling than hearing someone say, "This is good," you know, rather than, "Oh, this is too salty." So, you know, seasoning is definitely a guessing game for me, but I've learned how to balance ingredients and can actually pick up when something is too salty. Thankfully, now I can, but my family and friends, they fill me with compliments on my cooking and they even ask me for recipes and stuff. And I just love them for that. That helps me so much.
Yeah. Definitely. I just wonder, as you're telling me a little bit about that, have you had the comments from people when they find out that you don't have a sense of smell, that it must be a great diet plan?
That it's a great diet plan?
Has anyone ever said that to you?
I have not had anyone say that to me, surprisingly.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So for me, I'm just thinking, because I had a similar experience when I lost my sense of taste and smell at the beginning of gaining weight. And I had a few people say, like, "Oh, that's so awesome that you don't have a sense of smell. It must be easy for you to lose weight."
Wow.
And I just remember being so frustrated by that comment. So it's actually kind of nice to hear that. I mean, it's not nice that you had that scenario, but it's nice to hear that someone else also had a similar situation where they didn't lose weight, but they gained it.
Yes. Yeah. It's so common. It's crazy. But yeah, that diet plan, that's very interesting. I've never had anyone particularly say that, just, you know, "Oh, that song must be great that you can't smell." And it's just like, no, it's right. Not.
Yeah. So when smell comes up for you in your day-to-day life, do you take the time to explain to people that you can't smell?
So, you know, Katie, I used to take way too much time explaining to people that I can't smell. And majority of it is reminders when someone throws something like in my face to smell. And so now, you know, I just say I can't smell. I used to tell my story after I, you know, say I can't smell, but now I'll tell my story if someone wants more information. I don't volunteer it like I used to. So, you know, I've had people in the past question if I'm telling the truth, or they'll laugh when I said that. And, you know, it's more annoying than anything. So if someone, you know, asks me to smell, you know, something, or asks me how something smells, there's only three words that come in my mouth now, and that's "I can't smell." Or they'll just get a stare, you know, if I really know them and I know that they're fully aware that I can't smell.
Right. Yeah, it's unfortunate. The questions of, "Do you mean you can't smell this?"
Yeah.
You're like, "No, I mean, I just can't smell at all."
Right. And I think it takes some time for people to understand that. But, you know, it's like, it's not a joke, and I'm not just telling you that just for my own health. It's a fact.
Yeah, I think in some situations, it's a scenario where they are not aware that that's a possibility.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to keep that in mind when people ask me, "Do you mean you can't smell X, Y, or Z?" And take it as a moment of education of, no, I just mean in general. And yes, that's the thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. So my next question for you is one that I really enjoy asking everyone, and there's no right or wrong answer. I'm just interested in your thought processes behind it. Do you self-identify as having a disability due to your anosmia?
Yes, I do feel that my smell disorder is an invisible disability because I'm without a sense. It affects my judgment and my mental health, as far as I mentioned earlier, with depression and anxiety. And so I depend on family members and friends and sometimes even strangers, you know, in stores when I need a designated nose. Mm-hmm. But to be clear, I'm not saying that because I have, I think it's an invisible disability, it's not saying that I'm disabled. There's a complete difference. I can work full time, you know, I could work part time, I could just work period, I can go about my daily life. It's just with a NOSMIT, it's an impairment. Mm-hmm. And it can lead to mental health disorders for some.
I absolutely agree. I'm a big advocate of therapy. In particular, for me, when I first became anosmic, I had a lot of problems with that, with anxiety and depression, because it's scary and you don't understand what's happening and you feel like you're completely alone. Mm-hmm. So now, I guess further along in my journey now, I'm more comfortable talking about seeking out like mental health treatment, therapy, medications if needed, because it's really debilitating. It can be. And there's nothing wrong with needing help.
Not at all. I am a strong proponent of therapy. If you need it, definitely get it. Mm-hmm. And it's so helpful when it comes to anosmia, because me and you, we both acquired it. Mm-hmm. And so when you lose something, you're mourning a loss.
Exactly. The grieving process.
Yes, it really takes a grieving process, and it can take a long time with anosmia. I mean, you still deal with it on a daily basis because every day you're missing out on a sense of smell. Mm-hmm. And then you have no idea what your future will be like as far as like kids, all that stuff, because, you know, I have no idea. I don't have kids yet. I'm not married. So I'm curious, like, what those smells will, like, if I'll get to experience those or if it's something I'll won't be able to experience, because smell for me is attraction. Mm. And so not having that, it's a little hard for me.
Yeah. No, it's completely understandable. So my next question. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no. I was just going to say, just to sum up the disability thing, is just because anosmia isn't obvious to people, it doesn't mean it's not a disability.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good way to put that. So what would you like people who do not have a smell disorder to know about what it's like having one?
I want people to know that it's a very unique experience, especially to have and then to have lost your sense of smell. I don't know what it's like to wake up and smell something like my breath, my body wash. I can't even smell my dogs or my food I cook. You know, I miss smelling. And so I tell people you shouldn't take your smell for granted. Mm-hmm. It's a sense that I feel like way too many people take for granted. And navigating life without a sense of smell, it takes some time getting used to it, if at all. And so I just ask for people to educate themselves on anosmia in case you happen to know someone who has lost their sense of smell, or you might meet someone in the future. But especially during this time with COVID, with so many people losing their sense of smell, I feel it's important to people to educate themselves on it.
I agree. COVID-19 has definitely led to an increased awareness of the fact that you can lose your sense of smell.
Yes.
And there are a lot of new people who are experiencing it. So yes, definitely be aware that it can be a really scary thing for people.
Very much so.
So this next question is one that I am interested in, and I've recently started asking podcast guests. Do you think that anosmia impacts your memory formation or recall in any way, especially compared to when you used to have a sense of smell? So for me, to give some context to this question, I feel like my memory is worse now than it used to be. And I think that that has to do with the fact that I don't smell. What are your thoughts on that?
With memory and all, I have a exceptional memory. I remember everything, Katie. But when it comes to memories with taste and smell, not so much. Since it's been so long, I forget what some stuff smells like. Mm-hmm. But when I am at beaches or at a pool, I think about water because I love water. So I think about the smell of it. So when I'm at the beach, I think about the taste of salt water. And then when I'm in the pool, I think about the smell of chlorine. So mm-hmm. I have a recollection of, you know, what that smells like. And then I love perfumes. I can't remember which ones smell really good, but as far as what they exactly smell like, I cannot tell you. Mm. And then when it comes to food, I know what like used to taste good or what not. And the funny thing is I used to be a really picky eater, and I started eating new foods when I got anosmia. And one of my brothers actually told me I wouldn't eat half of the things I eat if I could really taste. And he's actually right, because when I am on my little round of steroids and I go binge eating, some stuff just does not taste good. But I go back eating it when, you know, it goes, when my sense of smell and taste goes back away. But yeah, like when it comes to that memory formation, it's very interesting. Like it's hard to remember some of the stuff. And it's funny with me because I go back and forth. Like if I have the steroids, then, you know, I can, all the memories come back with the smell. I'm like, oh, this is what it smelled like. You know, mm-hmm. then the memories come back. But when it's, you know, I'm not able to smell, I just wonder.
Yeah. Thank you. Do you have anything else that you'd like to share with listeners?
Yeah. I mean, I just want people to have more empathy. Honestly, the thing about anosmia, it's an experience that so many aren't familiar with. And I just want people to empathize more with us who have anosmia, because it's a very isolating experience and it can feel so lonely. And it's just having some form of understanding and then, you know, helping us out and providing support really, really helps us. But my main thing is that empathy, because our world lacks a lot of it.
I agree. That's a nice thing to share. So lastly, Sharika, how can listeners find you online and on social media?
So you can actually find me on Facebook. I have a page for my blog. So it's at My Anosmetic Life. So the at sign MyAnosmaticLife.
Fantastic. So I'll make sure to include that in addition to your actual blog website as well in the show notes so people can connect with you there. But thank you so much for coming on and speaking with me a little bit more about your story. I always love sharing listener stories so that everyone knows that we're not alone. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Katie, for allowing me to be on this platform. This is really important. I really appreciate you for sharing it with me.
Thank you.
Thank you to Sharika for coming on the podcast and telling us more about her own experiences living with a smell disorder. You will find her blog online at myonosmaticlife.wordpress.com. You can get in touch with her through her website if you're interested in doing so. She also has a Facebook page available for the blog, and I'll make sure to include the links to both of those things in the episode notes. I'm excited to continue announcing that the Smell and Taste Association of North America, or STANA, is being formed. We are the first patient organization focused on smell and taste disorders in the USA. STANA's website is online at www.thestana.org, and the fundraising website through GoFundMe is also located there. We're currently raising funds to pay for the startup costs of becoming an established 501c3 organization. If you're able to donate to help us get started, that would be greatly appreciated. And if you are unable to donate at this time, please do consider sharing the fundraising page with your networks so that we can continue to raise the funds that we need. For any questions or if you'd like to get involved, please visit the website or email us at info@thestana.org. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the Smell Podcast if you listen using iTunes. Reviews are helpful because they allow others to find the podcast. Finally, if you would like to financially support the show, you can do so by clicking on the link in the episode description. I really appreciate your support. And a huge shout out to everyone who currently contributes monthly to the show, because your generosity is what makes this podcast possible. Until next time, have a great day.